Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Bliwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And for today, it is another edition. It is a Friday, which means we are getting into the economic news of the week, particularly the impact that COVID-19 or the coronavirus has had on the local economy and global markets. And to help us unpack some of these issues, we are joined by Dr. Adrian Saville, who is the chief executive at Canon Asset Managers, and he's also a professor at the Gordon Institute of Business Science. Doctor, how are you?
It feels trite to say, but I'm good. I am rather more experienced at the end of the week than I was at the start of the week. It's been an absolutely extraordinary week in terms of capital markets, and an equally harrowing week in terms of economic impacts.
So yes, so we're going to be talking to Dr. Saville just around these issues. But before we begin, I thought it would just be good to highlight the fact that for today's edition of the Business Day Spotlight, because everyone is social distancing, because of remote working, I am somewhere in Randburg. I'm not sure where Dr. Saville is. Doctor, where are you?
I'm in Sandton.
He's in Sandton. And then we have our producer sitting in Boxburg, who's recording all of this, the wonders of technology. So as we begin the discussion, Dr. Saville, can you just give us just a sense of what COVID-19 has meant? Because it seems that things have come to quite a bit of a head, especially in the last week. We had that announcement from President Cyril Ramaphosa that sort of ushered us into a national state of disaster. And ever since then, the streets of Johannesburg have become quite quiet. People aren't going to work as much anymore. What are we seeing on the ground?
Well, you refer to me as doctor. And just to be quite clear, I am not a medical doctor. And what perhaps bemuses me, if anything, in this environment is the number of people who've turned into instant medical experts, making commentary on the impact, the spread of the disease, ways to manage it, and so on. And I put that as a not, you know, just as sort of a snide remark or a cynical remark, but actually as quite a serious note, because in many instances here, I think we are dealing with suspicion or assumption rather than fact. And it's going to be some time before we can actually work with the facts in terms of how this disease spreads, what its true impact is in terms of mortality rates. But what that suspicion and what the fear and what the risk management have translated into is some rather extraordinary, in fact, in many places, unprecedented steps to try and contain the virus. And that has had profound economic and industrial impact.
I think it will be safe to say that for the rest of this show, we will be referring to Dr. Saville as Prof. Saville. Prof, so I guess you're talking about extraordinary measures. And I think yesterday we saw something that I guess few of us even thought was going to be possible, because I think the consensus was that the Reserve Bank with its MPC was going to probably cut interest rates to help South African consumers during this time by about 25 basis points or a quarter of a percent. But we saw 100 basis cut, and for such a dovish governor like Lesetsha Kanyago, it really does point to dire times. Do you think it's an overreaction? Are we going too far? Where are you seeing it, especially in light of what you just said?
Well, you know, first let's just put into context, and perhaps going back to your opening observations, the market response to this news. So if we rewind to February, when COVID was first being reported, you know, there was perhaps sort of a rather removed set of observations about this disease having impact on Chinese industry and it might creep into supply chains. But for all intents and purposes, you know, this was This was a contained problem happening in, you know, in a fairly distant place. And over the course of the 4 weeks from the Chinese Lunar New Year to now, it has become abundantly clear that COVID doesn't care about borders and boundaries, and it's quite comfortable traveling, and has had rather profound impacts in a range of geographies, most notably places like Italy. Perhaps for the sake of policy responses, most impressively managed and contained in places like South Korea, Singapore. But you know what it's meant for markets is the impact on supply chain, the initial sort of suggestion that you might quarantine and then complete travel bans has had a spectacular impact on many businesses and industries. And the market, starting with the equity market, has sold off under this extreme anxiety. In the case of your sort of your bellwether or your global barometer, the S&P 500, it's sold down 25%. In the case of South Africa, we're down substantially more than that. And over the period, the rand has moved from 14.50 to the dollar to 17.50 to the dollar. So you've got equity markets that are stressed. Emerging currency markets are stressed. Bond markets have responded with people sort of fleeing to the safety of developed country bonds. The U.S. government long bond is below 1%. And, you know, for people who aren't intimate or familiar with bond markets, I can tell you a bond price of lower than 1% is absolutely extraordinarily expensive. It's a sense that, you know, there is nowhere safe to go other than here, and therefore I will only buy this. And, you know, maybe as a last observation in terms of the way markets and policymakers have responded, you have the Fed leaping into action by cutting U.S. interest rates first by 0.5%, and then in an extraordinary move on Sunday, they cut the U.S. interest rate by another 1%. So the United States now has joined much of the rest of the advanced world with zero interest rates.
And what is the actual, I guess, consequence of those 0% or no interest rates that you're talking about, I guess, on money and where people then decide that they're going to put their money after this?
I'm not convinced that this is nearly enough in terms of policy response. You know, the thinking is that if we drop interest rates by, you know, whatever percent, and in the case of the United States, it's dropping interest rates all the way to 0%, it will make things substantially easier for the financial system, that businesses that are at risk are not businesses that are flush with cash, but rather businesses that are filled with debt. Households that are at risk are not households that are filled with cash, but households that carry debt. And so by taking that element out of the financial system, by taking the interest rate out of the system or reducing the interest rate in the financial system, you take some risk out of the system. And that's, you know, perhaps that's all good and well, but, you know, and that was one of the policy responses in the global financial crisis. But I think what, you know, what really, you know, needs to be borne in mind here is that the COVID crisis, if we can call it that, is much more than a financial risk. In fact, whilst we are evidencing it in financial markets, the COVID crisis really has its roots in the real economy and in the response of people in panic or fear or hysteria to a pandemic. And the implications have been company shutdowns, shutdown on the mobility of people, and all of that anxiety or fear was given one further turn when Saudi Arabia and Russia waged open oil war over the previous weekend, and they have helped the oil price go from $50 a barrel to $25 a barrel. So you've got this very real economic shock being met with financial shock, and it's being fed with, you know, you could only call it sensibly afterwards, you know, panic. You know, at the moment, it sounds like if I use the word panic, I'm judging, because perhaps I am judging. You know, we simply don't know the real numbers, but, you know, that's the market response has been panic with a flea for safety.
And then in terms of some of those policy, reactions, the responses that are being given around the world, do you think it's enough as well? Because you've had a combination of interest rate cuts in some parts of the world,
yeah.
But also at the same time, we've seen in some countries, people are suspending mortgage repayments, they are suspending certain type of debts and loans. Would that action be something that could work in South Africa? Does it perhaps go further than just the interest rate cuts and the limit that it has that you're highlighting?
Perhaps, you know, before addressing that, I can maybe try and finish the earlier point that I'd raised, which was, you know, that I'm not sure that the policy responses are quite enough. And the reason why I say that is, What I think is needed here is fiscal stimulus rather than monetary stimulus. And the fiscal stimulus is the injection of money into the system and spending into the system, rather than just sort of relief from financial pressure or relief to capital and credit markets. Having said all of that, you know, the extent to which people have responded and reacted, I'm not even sure that fiscal response is going to be enough to keep the system going on. Perhaps what we need is a promise that, or an undertaking that, when all of this is over, you know, there is a fiscal stimulus to help encourage some confidence or certainty. But in South Africa's case, the cutting of 1% yesterday might be some form of relief for an already very strained economy, but I don't think it is going to be anywhere near enough to shelter us from this COVID storm. And as a result, we have revised our expectations of economic growth. You know, there was already a very feeble number being bandied about for South Africa, 0.8% at the start of the year. And I think that you can now talk about minus something for the full year. And for the sake of being economically exact, we put out a minus 0.8 number yesterday, suggesting that the South African economy will finish the year smaller than it started. And that is at a time when we already have a range of economic stresses and strains, including unemployment, a strained fiscus, and business profit growth that's just missing in action.
That's actually quite a dire picture that you're painting, Prof, especially what you're saying about the negative 0.8%, because so many people have revised these numbers. But then that also then begs the question of this looming ratings agency, that's meant to come in on the 27th, that's next week, Friday. Is it fair? Because some people argue that South Africa, with or without the coronavirus, was already in a bad state and on the road to being downgraded anyway. But given where things are at the moment, is it really fair for Moody's to come in and isolate South Africa, downgrading them, or should they just be downgrading, I guess, across the world?
Sure. You know, if you think of unfortunate timing, you know, at a moment when our Minister of Finance had, you know, come out with a relatively bold position on cutting spending, and whether you were or weren't cynical about if he could actually achieve that, you know, the reality is he had delivered a speech that had all of the elements that the ratings agency were looking for. I think we are now in the world of the hypothetical, in that there is no way of knowing if that spending cut was ever really intended, because not only I think will the necessary cuts be required, but perhaps the cuts will have to be even deeper, because the economic strain is going to take more government revenue out of the system. So South Africa, I think, is looking at an environment in which you've got our primary export prices of ores and precious metals have fallen down. There'll be some relief from rand weakness, but not enough to offset that. We perhaps have been given a small silver lining with the oil price being much lower. That'll take a little bit of inflation pressure and imported oil pressure out of price pressure out of the system. Company profit is going to come under substantial strain. Business, in terms of existence, is going to come under pressure. And here you have to think of specific industries like travel, tourism, leisure, hospitality are facing severe pressure. You know, I haven't spoken to a business in those industries that are sort of talking about any silver lining. It's just very, very dark. And, you know, all of that against a backdrop of a strained government balance sheet and, to make the point again, 25% unemployment. I don't know how a ratings agency can look past this and say everything's going to be okay. And you might say, well, that's unfair. And it is unfair because, you know, we couldn't choose the timing, but we did choose the preceding circumstances. We set those for ourselves.
No. I keep saying this, but it's such a dire situation. And especially that point that you're making about the type of industries that are being hit. I just went out for a drink the other day. I think it must have been Wednesday night.
Before 6
and
o'clock.
I went after 6 o'clock. And it seems right now that if you go to a restaurant after 6 p.m. in Johannesburg, you might as well be self-isolating because you'll be the only person in a restaurant. So I can imagine the type of economic impact that's being had on
yeah.
the actual businesses themselves, people that work on tips, people even not even having money to go to and from work. I guess on the last point, do you perhaps see some type of, a spike in short-term lending as people just try to make ends meet? Because one of the things that has happened right now economically is the fact that this thing, as you rightly said, the timing, we couldn't have picked a worse time. Because for consumers, the time came in the middle of the month when people don't have money. So do you expect that at least on that level, we might see a spike in short-term lending or people looking for alternative ways to actually make ends meet? Because one, you haven't been paid, and two, you might not be paid for a while.
You know, for perhaps you and me, we're not going to be going out for meals. We certainly aren't going to be driving as much. So our household budget might get some relief from, you know, less spending on eating out, less travel, and we'll be at home watching television, but it's not going to be sport. You know, the comment you make about tips and tellers who have to have this activity in order for their work to be justified. So, you know, overtime disappears. Tips for petrol attendants disappear. Tips for people working in restaurants disappear. And this puts people who are already, you know, financially vulnerable in precarious positions. So I am sincerely worried about the impact and implications. I'm not entirely sure that policymakers have thought this through in the fullest extent. I respect and appreciate that they have had to consider medical issues, but I don't think that the economic implications of this have been fully digested or even properly appreciated, and they are, I would venture, material. And you've seen this in the response of some company prices. So, you know, coming to the end of the week, we've got Capitec Bank's share price down 50% from its high earlier this year. Comair, the airline business, is down 50%. City Lodge is down 70%. Famous Brands is down 60%. This talks of very, very, very difficult industry circumstances that's going to require powerful action to pull the businesses right and it doesn't in any way take away from the economic implications that I think will only show themselves in weeks to come.
Very dire indeed. That was us with Dr. Adrian Saville, who is the chief executive at Cannon Asset Managers and a professor at the Gordon Institute of Business Science, giving us a roundup of the economics news of the week, highlighting the effect that COVID-19 or the coronavirus has had on the local and international economies. He is just highlighting the fact that policy regulations and policy interventions and responses so far have not been the way that they usually are, and have not been the best. And he's saying that some of the stimulus that's been given by some of the central banks and governments around the world might not be enough to actually carry people through this time of crisis. Prof, how can people, get in touch with you or engage with you on social media?
Probably the easiest place to find me in the public domain is just by my Twitter handle. It's my name, Adrian Saville. So if they seek me out at Adrian Saville, we'll get them to me, and I'd love to chat to anyone who wants to engage on this.
As you heard, that's at Adrian Saville on Twitter. He says he is happy to engage with people on this particular matter.
This is Mudiwa's Take.
The coronavirus is wreaking havoc across the world, and one of the things that it really makes me know and appreciate, I told this story the other day on my radio show, on Vince Radio, and I was saying that on Tuesday, I had a conversation with my sister. Now, my sister learns, lives, and works in Canada. And we both started working from home on the same day. And it really highlights the fact that coronavirus is one of those things that has actually not really, I don't want to use the word unified, but it really has brought the world together on one issue. Because usually when it comes to some of these global crises, whether it's the war on terror in the Middle East, or maybe 9/11 in 2001, you have the global financial crisis of 2008, or you have even the Ebola outbreak, which happened a few years ago in West Africa. Most of the time, these things are regionalized. And as much as there is a global impact of some sort, it's usually contained to one part of the world, and then you have some type of downstream effect. But right now, this is one of those things that is affecting everybody. Sometimes in times of crisis, people tend to run away from their areas. But right now, where can a person actually go to run away from corona? Knowing. And that's one of the things that's really quite scary, I think that's the word. And if you echo some of the sentiments shared by Dr. Adrian Saville, just mentioning the fact that the policy interventions right now, there just needs to be more done. And it just highlights the fact that there needs to just be more done on a individual level, on a business level, perhaps at a state, provincial government level, and I guess on a regional level, just to be prepared for the unforeseen circumstances. Personally, as a person, you were not ready for all the panic buying that's happening right now. Some people weren't ready for, you know, as much as you're working from home, it means your grocery bill goes up. It's the middle of the month. If you're a business owner, what does that mean in terms of buying your stocks, your supplies? For a country, right? Yesterday, 100 basis point cut, it just points to the fact that the government doesn't really have a lot of money to be pumping money into the system. Rather, they're doing what they can, and that's a monetary solution, which is to cut interest rates. But what Dr. Saville says is actually a good point, that you need to be pumping money into the system. But does the government have that money to actually pump into the system? These and other questions remain to be answered as we move forward. We're going to keep watching the coronavirus. As we said at the start of the show, it's something that we've been watching from the get-go. So that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcast on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab. And then on Twitter, we're hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Cast, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller, and I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. This has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.